So tonight we want to study a mimer, an essay here in Pele Yoes, which is called Bizayon. I mean, that's the
disgrace.
That's the title he gives it. And he opens up this chapter with the following quote from a Mishnah in Avos: Amru Rabbeinu Zichronum Livracha. Al tehi vaz lechol adam she'ein lo shah, which literally translates in the following way: don't make light of any person, don't think he's insignificant, because there's no person that won't have his time. Every person has his moment of glory when he emerges as someone, you know, front stage, as someone significant in what goes on, even in your own life. He gives an example of a ger, let's say a person who's not Jewish, but he converts to Judaism, and he has no family. In a sense, he's a loner. But even such a person, ein levazos ulekalel, don't humiliate such a person or think light of such a person. And now, in the last three words here, in his presentation, the Pele Yoetz quotes a Gemara in Psachim. Demalchusayhu Bosar Udnaihu. Now we're going to try to figure out what those words mean. And we're going to open up a Gemara Psachim on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Gemara says the following. Now, this Gemara is an agadic statement about a child. Not one child, but three different youngsters, so to speak. In one case, it's actually not a human being, but a young species. Shlosha ein miskanim bahem. There are three individuals, or three beings, I should say, because we're talking about an animal in one case, that are very young, and sometimes, you know, adults tend to have an attitude of disdain, so to speak, towards children, or not giving them, you know, their due honor. You know, we take children lightly sometimes. We don't give them, you know, so
respect, yeah.
We don't give them the respect perhaps that they need. And the Braisa here, Tanur Rabbanan, Shlosha Ein Miskanim Bahem. Ein Miskanim Bahem is we shouldn't think lightly of them and perhaps insult them. The Eluhem, and these are the three: Nachri Katan, Nachash Katan, V'Talmid Katan. So we're talking about a young non-Jew. We're talking about a small, young serpent or snake, and a student. You know, you got a yingle, as we call it, who's learning in a cheder, and he looks very young and immature. And the Gemara says, don't start up with such a person. Be careful. Give that person the due respect. My time, a why? And here are the three key words: demalchusayhu achore adnaihu, which literally means that their malchus, meaning that there'll be a moment in which they become kings, and their moment of glory, of kingship, is behind the door, so to speak. In other words, right now it's closed. But literally, the word Adonaihi translates, now for this I'll give you a little bit of an insight if you don't know it, into Aramaic grammar. You know, Aramaic is a language that very much developed from Lashon Kodesh, from the Hebrew language. So certain letters in Aramaic replace Hebrew letters. A Dalid very often replaces a Zion.
Wait a minute, Aramaic developed from Hebrew?
Yes. A lot of Aramaic is based on Hebrew. All languages developed from Hebrew. If you remember the story in the Bible of the Dar HaFloga. And
what?
Dar HaFloga. I don't know how to say it in English.
Babel?
Yeah, the Babylon.
They built the Tower of Babel?
Right. HaFloga means God separated them and spread them across the earth.
So then, before that time, they were all speaking English.
Correct. And that's why the Chazal tell us that Adam HaRishon, when he gave names to each of the species, God passed by every species of animal and creature in front of him, and Adam HaRishon gave a name. The name was in Lashon Kodesh. And the name itself indicates the essence and the uniqueness of that being. Okay, that's not for now. That's a whole nother discussion for an hour shiur. But be that as it may, what we have to know here is that there's going to be a moment of glory, of significance, of perhaps even authority in the life of this child. We don't know exactly when it is. It's behind, again, you and I would say maybe behind closed doors, because we haven't yet got to that moment when the child, you know, comes out center stage in all his glory in his adult life. But the word Adonaichi, because again, if you take the Aramaic, you have the Dalet replacing a Zion. So what does the word Adonaichi mean? Are you looking at the word inside? If you look at it, and you substitute a Zion for the Nun, I'm sorry, if you substitute, I meant to say, a Zion for the Dalet, because in Aramaic, the Dalet replaces the Zion. So look at the first four letters of that word. And what is it? Aleph, Vav, instead of Dalet you put in a Zion, and then a Nun. What is that? Ozen. Ozen. Ozen is an ear. David, you want to do me a chesed?
Sure.
Could you bring me an art scroll on Psachim?
Okay.
But it has to be Kuf Yud Gimel. So you have to, you know, you have to look at the asterisks on the outside. So it's, I'm guessing it's either number 3 or number 4. Hopefully you'll find it really quickly.
Psachim,
yeah, Kuf Yud Gimel. Because I wanted to see how he translates the word Adonaichi. And maybe he has a footnote. In any event, let's take a quick look at Rashi. Rashi says, Klomar, what does this mean? Asidim legadel, these children or these young will eventually grow older, mature. Vitigdal emosam, and our fear of them will grow. In other words, once they become, you know, fully ripened, mature adults, and they're very strong.
I remember what you did to me when I was a child.
Yeah, right. And here's the point. V'inakmu mimcha. What they'll do is they'll take revenge against you because they'll remember how you treated them when they were little punks, if you pardon the expression, right? Little children. And they harbor that resentment. So be careful and respect them, because later on in life, you don't know exactly when they're going to reach that stage in which they are malchus. They have the power, they have the authority, and they'll take revenge against you. So treat everyone carefully. And that's what the Pelioites quotes as Gemara, and he says that this Gemara really reflects the Mishnah that says in Ovos, Ein lecha adam she'ein lo shah. Every person gets his moment of glory and authority. So treat that person well, because you don't know where that person might end up going. You know, they say about even the President of the United States that there were certain Jewish people who treated him well when he was younger, before he was famous. And he never forgot that. And there, what?
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, but not only the President of the United States. I mean, there are tons of stories about people who remember what chesed, what kindness was extended to them in their youth, and they never forget that.
That's true.
And that's exactly the message here, the Pelioites and the Gemara Psachim, and we're going to see now the Ben Yehoyada on that Gemara in Psachim.
I'm missing Pesachim out there at all various high schools.
Okay, thank you so much.
I have mine from Shir, but it says Volume 1.
No, that's not going to help us. Yeah. Okay, then, I just thought I would make sure that he has the same translation as I do. Now, who was the Ben Yehoyada? In Iraq, there was a great rabbi. He was more famous for a work called Ben Ish Chai. And he wrote a work on the Agadah, which is absolutely phenomenal, called the Ben Yehoyada. So let's take a look at what he says about this Gemara. Nirali, on the second line, Masha Omar Akum Katan, the word Katan here has two meanings to it. Katan could be an immature child in his early years, but Katan could also mean someone who's relatively insignificant. He's, you know, he's not a gadol. He's not some of the great giants that we look up to. He doesn't have or command such respect or authority. And he wants to interpret that akum katan, when it's referring to a non-Jewish katan, it doesn't mean a little child, but rather it means katan bechashivus. He's not so significant in his position in life. As we said before, he doesn't command so much respect. Hu adam pachus. You know, he doesn't go to the fancy parochial schools, or he doesn't have a great position. Maybe he just, delivers newspapers. You know, it's not from the most outstanding people that you know of. He says, im kol zeh, despite that, efshar, it's possible, she is gadel v'yishtarea, which means he will grow up and he will become powerful. And here he quotes a Medrash in Koheles. The Medrash in Koheles is going to tell us a story about Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, who is one of the great Tanoim. And the Medrash in Koheles is going to tell us about an event in which Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua saved the entire Jewish community. So what I suggest we do, let's take a little bit of a break. We'll leave the Ben Yodiyada for a minute, and let's look at the Medrash in Koheles in its original form. That's number 5 on the bottom right. Okay. Here's the story. The Medrash tells us, Shahaya Holech L'tayel, this is a Medrash about the great Tana Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, he went for a walk, Al Yad Hayam HaGadol, on the water shore, the shore of the great Mediterranean Sea, the raw sfina miturefes bayam, and he saw a boat that was being tossed back and forth by the waves, and obviously this boat was in danger of being of sinking. Ubeherif ayin nitbas hasfina v'chol asher betocha, and in just a minute's time, it was quite clear that the sfina would be thrown down to the sea by these waves, and everything inside of it would be destroyed. Aval adam echad, but one of the men on the ship, and this is all what Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua notices, jumps off the boat and he's holding on to the keresh ha'nia. In other words, he's holding on to one of the planks of wood, let's say the side, perhaps the flank of the boat. And as a result, he's able to somehow get himself over to shore. Vihu arim b'li levush. He is naked. He probably didn't have any food to eat. Keep in mind, whatever he had was lost on the boat. Now keep in mind that Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua lived at the time of the Romans. This is before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Jews would go from various corners of Israel on Aliyah to Yerushalayim. That's called Aliyah L'Regel, 3 times a year. So there was a Jewish group that was there. And this non-Jewish man begs them, Shirachmu Olav, that they should have compassion on him. Ki hu ben Esav achi Yaakov Aviyam, because he is a descendant of Esav, who is the brother of your ancestor, Yaakov. Vehem lo nasnu lo ma'uma. And they were callous. They couldn't care less about him. They were not impressed with his great yichus that he came from Esav. Kevan sharaz zos Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar saw what was going on. Immediately, pashat es bgado, he took off his outer garment, ha'elyon, v'yichaseu, and immediately covered this non-Jew. V'lokach oso lebeso, he takes him home. Nasan lo lecho v'lishtos, he gives him food and drink. Ushtemeos dinrim, and he gives him 200 dinrim as a gift, which is a significant sum of money. Not only that, Vayakivehu, and the man doesn't have any transportation, so that Rabbi Elazar rides him on the back of his camel or his donkey. Arbaasrei parsa, 14 parsaot. This is a large, long area. Ad beso, until he comes to his house. Because again, you know, he probably lived in Caesarea, one of those towns on the shore, where the boat was meant to take him either close to his house or at a distance that he could go, and that's where Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua left him off. So could you imagine, you know, sometimes we talk about chesed and doing acts of kindness and benevolence. I mean, how would you describe this act of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua? Like, how would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10?
Top of the line.
And for whom? For a non-Jew. And look what he does for him. He takes off his own clothes to give it to him. He takes him into his house. He feeds him. He gives him a very significant sum of money. He travels with him all the way back to his house, a significant distance. Amazing chesed.
What year was this?
I don't know exactly what year it is, because the Medrash doesn't usually quote a year. Vayihi hayom, meaning the day came, vayomas ha-Kesar, and the Caesar died. The Caesar of Rome died. He was a Rasha. He was a very evil Caesar, but he died. Now the question is, who's going to take over for him? Ha-ish ha-hu olal kisei ha-Kesar. This guy that Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua saved became the Caesar of Rome.
Incredible
story. Ugzera yatzim ilafanov, and when he, the first thing he did when he was appointed as the Caesar, he promulgated a decree, larogus kol yehudim. I mean, this is like Haman in his time. So why don't we read about this in Megillas Esther? I don't know. But Oz bo kula meitzel Rabbi Elazar. Apparently the word got out that Rabbi Elazar saved this fellow who became the Caesar of Rome. Ubikshu, they begged him, sheyelech levatel es hagzera, that he should use his influence to nullify the decree. Vayomalem Rabbi Elazar lo yadatem, ki hamelech lo yase b'chinom. You know, you got to offer him some sort of bakshish, as they call it here. Amru lo yeshlanu dalet alafei dinrim lefaiso. We are going to send you with a bag of 4,000 dinrim, a fantastical sum of money. Holach Rabbi Elazar ubayit sal hamelech. Vayhi kasher ro'o sal hamelech. The Caesar immediately recognized Rabbi Shua. Nafal mikiso al apav. He fell from the throne and prostrated himself in front of Rabbi Elazar. V'yomer, madu atarachta atzmecha lavo. What brings you here? I know it's a bit of a schlep for you. Heishiv Rabbi Elazar, shaliach anochi mibnei ami. I am the representative of my people, and I have with me 4,000 dinrim. So the Melech says, you know what? Ha'arba elofim dinri you shalcha. You keep it. Tachas hashtemeos asher nasatoli. Just as a replacement, a payback with interest for the 200 dinrim that you gave me. Va'gzera avatel bishvilcha. And I will nullify the decree because of you. Ve'vi'u bebeis gnozov. And he brought him into his private chambers. Again, this is very similar to what Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua had done on behalf of the Caesar. V'nasan lo shivim chalifos smolos, and he gave him 70 outfits, costumes, because again, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua was the one who gave up of his dress in order to give this individual a clothing. V'yishalchu b'shalom, he sent him in peace. Karu olav, and they quoted a pasuk in this to describe this experience. Shlach lach l'pnei amayim ki berov hayomim timtzeinu. Send your bread, so to speak, on the waters, on the surface of the water, because at some point you'll find it and you'll bring it back. The Ben Yehoyada quotes this medrash of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua as a prime example of what it means that ein miskanin benochri katan. Meaning, Katan means someone who's insignificant. In this case, he's just someone who's happened to save himself from a shipwreck, who's naked, he's nobody. You think he's a nobody, but you never know who he is and who he'll become. And I'm reminded of a story. I mean, I'm sure you're all familiar with this story, about one of the Hasidic rebbes in Austria before Hitler took over, who used to go for a walk on the boardwalk every day. And there was a certain Austrian guy who would pass him by. And every time he passed him by, every morning on the walk, the Hasidic Rebbe would say to him, "Gut morgen, Herr," whatever, I forgot his name. I don't know if the story knows his name. And when the guy very rarely would respond. But when this Hasidic Rebbe was sent to Auschwitz, and it was time for the selection, and he came by, he looked at the officer, the Nazi officer, who was to determine life or death, and he said to him, "Good morgen, Herr so-and-so," and he sent him to life. You never know when you deal with a person who he's going to be and when you'll need him. The Ben Ish Chai says the following, Nachash Katan, what does it mean when the Gemara says a young serpent? Lav lafuke nachash gadol. He says, when you treat a nachash with care, how much more so if it's a big serpent? Kolshkein hu. El debegadol belavachi yesh moral le'adam lizgarispo. No one would start up with a very significant sized serpent, right? What do they call those cobras that... That reach a major size, not a cobra. It's a different
python.
A python, yeah. If you ever go down to Miami, you know, in these places, you can go visit the
anaconda.
Everybody naturally would have fear from such a snake and not start up with it. But what the Gemara wants to tell us here in Masechet Pesachim is don't even start up with what looks like a harmless little snake. Now he asks the following question. What does it mean, Malchuseu Basar Adunaichi, that the kingship is behind of this person who will eventually perhaps emerge as the king, is behind the ears? Lo Amar Basar Reishaihu, maybe behind his head. In other words, the head is usually considered more significant than the ears. Nira Libis Yat Dishmai, I want to offer the following interpretation. Ikar hapu'ulos nasim al yidei shloshe varm shebarosh. If we look at the head of a person, including his face, there are three organs that are responsible for most of human activity. One are the eyes, then we have the ears, so we have sight and we have hearing, and then is the peh, the mouth, for speech. So we have the eyes, the ears, and the mouth. The nose somehow is less significant. And he says the following. Ha'inayim yesh lahem dlatot. There are doors, so to speak, that cover the eyes. We call them eyelids, right? Lachein poel hara'ir shala. If you want to activate your eyes to see something, tzarech lo siyua v'eza. The eyes need some sort of help from man. Man has to sheyiftach hafapeh einav yesta. With an action, he has to open up his eyelids so that the eyes can see. The mouth can't speak. It has doors to it. The lips are closed. Man has to open up these doors by opening up his mouth. Otherwise, if the mouth is closed, he cannot speak. The ear is very unique. Poel hishava bahem. It is always active. There are no doors that have to be opened in order to activate the power of the ears to hear. Ein tzarech l'siyua ha'odam atzmo. Ki aznayim psuchos tamid, the ears are always open. V'ein soger aleihem. There's nothing that closes them. And therefore, hadibur, in other words, if somebody speaks, nichnas bahem pisom, b'li eze v'siyua, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, obviously you can cover your ears, but if you don't expect it, piso means all of a sudden somebody yells something out, you hear a sound on the street, a fog one or whatever it might be. So you have no choice. You can be absolutely passive, but yet you'll hear it. Kach elu, malchusayu basar adonaihu. Their malchus, their authority, if they ever reach this level, is a result or can be compared to the ears. Ratzalom adugnas haozen. Shadibur nichnas lehem pisom beli eze v'siyua. V'kach elu malchusa tovu lehem pisom beli sheitztarchu achana b'ezer v'siyua me'achirim o mihem. I think he implies the divine element in the equation. A person can all of a sudden be appointed, be elevated to a status of authority, of greatness, of even kingship, without any work on his own. It's like behind his ears, just like his ears will hear sudden voices. Suddenly a person, again, as part of the divine plan, will be elected to be the president. Nobody would even have guessed that such a thing would be possible. And therefore, when you look at this katan, who might be mature, but you think, who is he? He's a nobody. Keep in mind that overnight he might rise to glory, to authority, even without his ability to do so. And therefore the ears become the paradigm to explain why we have to be very careful in terms of our relationship with anyone. Because anyone, and even what looks like a small person, a small snake or a small guy, you know, doesn't seem to be from the most significant people, you never know. All of a sudden, overnight, without any action and any rhyme or reason, that person rises to, and you become dependent upon that person. The medrash of Rabbi Elazar ben Shavua is such a beautiful medrash, because it really conveys the message of how much we have to be careful the way we treat a person. And the story I told you about the good morning, you know, you never know who that person is going to become. You can't know. That's the way Hashem runs the world.
Yes, nobody thought Trump was going to become president.
Did anybody predict that would happen?
I don't know. Everybody says it's impossible.
Impossible. And then afterwards they wanted to contest the elections because no one could believe it. And of course, you know, those who lost, they certainly didn't want to believe it.
And they've been trying to get him out since.
Correct.
But he got in anyway.
He got in. I have a feeling it's part of a divine plan.
Of course.
It really makes no sense, you know.
Sure.
So imagine the way we interact with people. Again, I think the idea of interaction with non-Jews is a perfect, perfect example. You know, how significant, how sensitive we have to be. You really don't know. Again, this is on a pragmatic level. You know, you could talk about a different level, more of a religious angle to this. You know, there's Tzelem Elokim and all these lofty concepts. But even on just a very simple, pragmatic level, be careful. You don't know what you're treading on. David?
I'm just thinking about in the world of halacha, for example, a lost object. Aren't there things with a non-Jew and a Jew are treated differently? Saving a life, for example, even a lost object, you find a lost object, or Jews you return.
Right. So, for example, if you return an object to a guy, in our society, when there's what's called Eva, it might be highly recommended that you do so. But again, the halacha works with strict differences and laws and details. We're not saying that a Jew and a guy are treated the same way. But what we are saying is, be careful about how you treat another person. Be sensitive. Nowhere does it say that you go ahead and you're callous and inconsiderate and lack of compassion vis-a-vis a goy. Again, there are many different halachot. You know, there's certain goyim that we have to treat with respect because there's something called a ger toshav, a non-Jew who wants to live amongst us. A non-Jew wants to support the Jewish people. You know, today, again, if we go back to America, we have the evangelists. And again, there's no hard set rule, but there's certainly there's certainly a support for the Jewish nation in the America of today, which is so anti-Israel. And you know, we have to bless our Hashem for our stars, you know, that there are still Americans that understand what Israel is all about, and we are the beacon of democracy and goodness here, and that the Arabs have it best here. I mean, I can tell you about some of the workers that my wife works with, you know, so-called Palestinians, who, you know, are making good money. You know, as you know, what happens is because they pick up the kind of jobs that the Jewish people don't want to take on, and very often they make more money than the Jews because they are the carpenters and they're the builders. But in any event, you know, nobody's persecuting them. As long as they don't persecute us, we don't persecute them. So we treat them kindly, but we don't have that many friends in the world. You know, once in a while the bright light is when a Muslim or an Arab recognizes publicly the goodness of the Israeli people, and he probably knows that his life is on the line. You know, because if he tells the truth, they might find him in a dark alley and do a job on him. You know what I'm saying? So, but those goyim in America who support Israel. And we have to realize that this is a great boon from Shamayim. But we have to treat all goyim well. Now, if you talk about a goy who's anti-Semitic, that's a different story. You know, then maybe we have to figure out how to try to bring such a person down. I don't know. But again, with a great deal of care and awe and concern about how to do such a thing. Now, here's a beautiful story, which is on the top left of your page, number 6, about the tzlach. You know, I found it a little bit of a chiddush, a surprise, that in this book called Kol Simcha, when he talks about the tzlach, he calls him the tzlach. True, he wrote a book called the tzlach, which is called the Tzion Nefesh Chaya, but his most famous work is the Noda B'Yehuda. It's an absolute classic. So I'm not sure why he calls him the tzlach, but apparently in certain circles, the Noda B'Yehuda was more famous for his work than Tzlach. Do you know the Ches in Tzlach? This is Nutrika, this Rashi Tevis, is Chaya. Do you know where the word Chaya comes from? That was his mother's name. He named the book after his mother. You know, people think that, you know, we don't have that relationship to women, you know, we don't treat women well. But the Tzlach was one of the greatest minds in Ashkenazic Jewry in the last 3 centuries. He named his magnum opus after his mother. Anyway, the Marsha also was named after his mother.
Marsha.
Right, that's good, Marsha. Her name was Adel. Adel, yeah. His last name was Adel. Adels. In any event, here's a story about the Tzlach. He was 12 years old at the time that this story takes place. And he shows up in the Beis Medrash. They allowed children into the Beis Medrash. They didn't expect them to really understand what was going on, especially with a complex discussion. And there was a complex issue on the table. A person had taken an oath that he would not see his brother. And unfortunately, that's a common kind of an oath, because there are grudges and there are frictions within families. I don't know if there's any family that could say that there's no friction at all in their family. I suppose there are a few, but I think they're in the minority, not the majority. So this man took an oath that he would never see his brother. Now, as years pass by, they find Nebuch a dead body, and they're trying to identify the body. And the people think that this is the brother of the one who took the oath. So they came to ask him, would he be willing to look at his brother's dead body and identify him? And immediately he said, I took an oath that I would not see my brother. And I can't participate in this great mitzvah of identifying a dead body because of my oath. So immediately the Rabbanim, the great scholars of that particular city, I think it took place in Prague, they gathered together to try to figure out whether or not in this case we could allow him and permit him to violate his oath for the greater good of identifying a dead body, because to identify a body means we know where to bury him, we know how to put up a matseva, and we know that his wife can remarry. I mean, there are many, many implications here of identifying a dead body. Here in Israel, it's called Zach, Zihui Chalalim. Have you heard of it? It's one of the branches of the army, and it's a very difficult, it's part of the Rabbanut in the army, very difficult to function. I mean, especially after Chas V'Shalom, a pigua, you know, blood goes up, and you have to identify. Again, today we have forensic medicine, there are different ways of identifying a body and teeth and so forth, but back in the day, it meant hakoras ponim, that you have to look at the face of the corpse and identify it. So the rabbis couldn't figure out what should be in this case. All of a sudden, this 12-year-old boy that nobody pays any attention to raises his hand and he claims he has an answer to the question. So at this point, the Zaken Muflag, that's the elder statesman of the entire group of Rabbanim, when he hears that, he immediately says, "Who are you? You're a 12-year-old child. And you are," I don't know how to translate it into English, if you could help me, "Nichnas bidvarim," when you interrupt someone who's speaking. Oh. Is there a word for that? Anyway, you...
Interrupting your elders.
Interrupting. You know, who are you? What a chutzpah. That's how he responded to the child. And nobody knew that the child was worth anything, so to speak. But amongst the various rabbis, not the elder statesman, but one of the rabbis was a teacher in the school where the little Nodav Yehuda studied. He care as Talmido, and he said to the Zaken, "Mechila, please forgive me, but I would like to give this child a chance to say what he has to say." So at this point, if I was standing in front of the Panovich Yeshiva, you know, or Chevron Yeshiva, with 1,000 Talmidei Chachamim, I would clap off a tish, and I would ask if any one of the 1,000 students could answer this question. And I honestly believe that no one would have an answer. But this 12-year-old boy had an answer. And here's what he said. The Pasuk says that God promises the people of Israel through Moshe, "Ki kasher ra'isem es Mitzrayim ayom," you see Mitzrayim today, "lo tosifu l'ra'oso sam ad olam." This is right before the splitting of the Red Sea. God promises that we, the people of Israel, will never see Mitzrayim again. But yet, if you fast forward approximately 20 verses in the very same chapter, after the splitting of the sea, the Pasuk says, and we're all familiar with this verse, "Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meis al svas hayom." Now, how could the Pasuk say that the Jewish people saw Mitzrayim when the Pasuk promises that they'll never see these people again?
See them alive.
Oh, the answer is that Re'iyas Ponim, to see someone, means as he's alive. But li'achar mikan, once he's dead, that's not called re'iyah at all. And here too, the person took upon himself an oath, says this little 12-year-old, that he will not see the face of his brother. But seeing the face of his dead brother is not called seeing his face, and therefore this is not a violation of his oath. Immediately all the people stood up, and they clapped, and they appreciated what this little child had said, and none of the gedolim, none of the elder statesmen, the scholars knew how to answer this question. And the bottom line is that sometimes a yeled katan, right? That was one of the three categories that we spoke about in Pesachim. Is you make fun of him and you say, "What a chutzpah is that you think you're a big shot, a 12-year-old? You're gonna answer the question that the greats can't answer." Eich shahaya katan. And they were making fun of him, and yet he was the one who was so great, even in his youth, that he was able to answer this question. I think this is an absolutely stunning story. I love this story. I never heard it before, and it makes a tremendous impact on me. Now, in the Musar movement, there were various shining lights in the Lithuanian yeshivot. One of those yeshivot was called the Lomja Yeshiva. And the head of that yeshiva was a man named Gardon. But the mashgiach in the yeshiva was Rav Yaakov Neumann. And he was a great Baal Musar, and he wrote a book on Musar called Darkei HaMusar. And he tries to explain two words in a pasuk that seem out of place. The first part of the pasuk we know by heart. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love thy neighbor as thyself. But then afterwards, people don't realize it says, Ani Hashem, I am God. Says the Mashgiach, Rabbi Yaakov, l'chora, at the face of it, Ani Hashem miyutarhu. These words, Ani Hashem, are totally superfluous. They're out of place. Efshal Lomri says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, V'ahavta l'reacha, and the answer is, Mipnei she'bereacha yesh Hashem. You have to know Ani Hashem in order to understand what it means to love your fellow Jew. I am God. And therefore, yesh tselem Elokim b'chol Adam. Yeah, he's not even talking about the Jewish nation. He's talking about every single human being is endowed with the image of God. Ukshata oev es reacha. In fact, when you love your fellow man, ata oev es HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you in fact love God. And now we can begin to understand a Gemara that says the following. He doesn't tell you where it is. I think if I remember, it's in Sota. I'll try to find it for you. Hasoter lo shel chaver. If a person slaps the face, the jaw of his friend, ki'ilu soter lo'o shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kabiyach, it's like he slapped God in the face. Misnaig im Yisrael b'derech zel lomar, ma es el Yisrael v'heim krovai. God declares, treat your fellow Jew in the same way that you treat me. Why? Because the Jew is my relative. He's my close relative. He's a she'er basar. He's my flesh and blood, so to speak. Because Chazal tell us that the batzug, which literally translates as the female companion, the wife of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is Knesset Yisrael. And if you go through the psukim in Tanakh, especially in Shir HaShirim, then Knesset Yisrael, the people of Israel, are called Biti, my daughter, Achosi, my sister, Imi, my mother. And then the pasuk says, Yisrael Am Krovo, which means that we are the relatives, the close relatives of God. Kurva, Mamish Kurva, Yeshlo Imoyim, Ubanavim. And very often the Torah says that we are the children of Hashem. So we're called his daughter, his sister, his mother, his children. Imkain, Kamet Sara Kalech Vechod, how much respect and sensitivity and love do we have to give and shower on our fellow Jew? Because each one is really an extension of God, so to speak. He's got the Tzelem Elokim. He's a close relative of the Almighty. And he says, "B'tkufa zu, we live in a contemporary world in which Yadut Haridit omeret mevureret mevudedet v'neveket al nafsha." To a large extent, the Orthodox community is isolated. It's lonely. It's living literally trying to survive because of kol akomim olam mibayis umechutz. I mean, I'll give you an example. I don't have to tell you this. In Belgium, you know, they outlawed Mila. You know that, right? That in a country called, you heard of a country called Belgium, right? There's no circumcision in Belgium. It's against the law. It's against the law to circumcise a child in Belgium.
This is recent.
I think in the last maybe 2 weeks. I don't know exactly when. There's a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism in Belgium today.
They just have to leave the country. They have to move out of the country, basically.
Either that or they have to ship out the babies to do Mila. I don't know. But it might be a good time to invest in real estate here in Israel. I don't know.
They're trying to do this in California, too.
In California, there'll be other states. Yeah. You know, we're in bad shape.
And it's Jewish people who are pushing for it.
Doesn't surprise me. Sometimes self-hating Jews are the worst enemy. And I'm very scared that the next president of the United States is going to fit that description. I'm very, very scared.
You're very sad at what?
I'm very scared. I'm very afraid.
Oh, scared. Yeah.
That the next president of the United States of America might fit that description, what I call a self-hating Jew. Those are the worst Jews throughout history. His closest advisors are outright anti-Israel people. But he himself is anti-Israel. He's married to a Shiksa. In any event, we live in a period of time where we're literally trying to survive, you know, to put our head amongst water. Kamachova lenu, how much of a responsibility do we have, an obligation? Lahagbir's dibuk chaverim. Says Rabbi Yaakov Naiman, we have to intensify our care and our sensitivity, our love and camaraderie with our fellow Jew. The avas chaverim, the love of our good friends. Ushmira al kovra chaverim, and we have to be very careful about the honor that we give to other Jews. Lefachot b'shukatenu, at least those who are within our community. He wants to go even beyond that, but you know, let's even ask for the easy part, that we should have respect and love within our community. Because if we don't have that, and if we don't fulfill the ve'ahavta l'reach kamocha, then this Ani Hashem message has been wasted. And we're mistreating Chas V'Sholom and being insensitive to the sons of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the close relatives of God. That's not going to do well for the Jewish people. And finally, the last source I wanted to see on this page is Rabbi Yerucham, the great Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva. When I say the Mir Yeshiva, Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch, that's going back almost, I'm exaggerating, but maybe 80 years ago, more even, back to the city of Mir in Lithuania. And he emphasizes the concept of sensitivity towards another Jew. Because the Torah says, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, it says, "Velo sala b'malos al mizbechi." There were steps leading up to the Mizbeach. And the Torah prohibits us from taking wide steps. Because, again, in those days, the way they wore clothes, it was that if you took wide steps, then the erva, that part of the body that should not be exposed, will be exposed to the steps. In other words, these pieces of stone would see, so to speak, the erva of a person. And Rashi says the following: Shal yidei hamalos, by going up these steps, atatzorich laharchiv psiosecha. When you walk up steps, again, there are different types of steps, obviously, but you have to separate your legs in order to get up and climb from one step. The afal pi she'ein gili arayas mamish, sharek siv v'yasolahem michnasei bad. Even though they wore michnasayim, the kohanim, when they climbed up the steps to the mizbeach, they were wearing slacks. Those are called the michnasayim. Mikomokom harchoves apsios, the very moment that they separate their legs to climb these steps, karov legili erva. It's like gili erva. It's not literally gili erva because they did wear clothes. Ves hanoeg bahem minag bizayon, and this would be, so to speak, a bizayon, an embarrassment, humiliation. Who are you humiliating here? Who are we humiliating now when we take these big steps?
That's why it was a
the stones, right?
It was a plank, so they didn't have to raise their feet.
There were two parts in the Migdash. There was a part where they had to climb steps. For example, there were 15 steps from the Ezra's Noshim to the Ezra's Yisrael, and then to get into the Ulam, there were another few steps. I forget exactly how many steps there were, maybe four. No, three steps, I think. And then to get up to the Mizbeach, there was a keresh, right? He says, Hadvarm kal v'chom. Rashi says, what ethical message should we learn from this Isur? Uma avonim halol. These stones, she'ein bem das, they don't have any awareness. Lahakpid al bizyonam, to be insulted by humiliating them. Omra Torah, the Torah says, Ho v'yesh behem tzorech, the stones are part of the Beis HaMikdash, lo tinog behem minog bizayon. Don't treat them in a way that, so to speak, is humiliating to them. Is chavercha, Your friend, says Rashi, Shehu bidmus yotzrecha, he was created in the image of God, who makpid al bizyono, and he's very sensitive if you humiliate him. Allah has come for come out much more so. You know, a lot of people talk about covering the challah, but forget about covering the challah. This is a message straight from the Chumash, straight from Rashi. Says Rav Yerucham, the Mashkiach of Mir, Lo Madnu Anu Mikan Geder Advarim, Eifo Maschil Ageder Shal Minig Bizoyon. If you want to know what is considered a behavior that humiliates, you're talking about a domem, you're talking about the stones that are inanimate objects, Eino Makpid Al Bizyonim, and yet, despite the fact that they cannot be sensitive to their humiliation, we have to learn from that. That's the beginning of Bizayon. That's the basic, you know, first step or first fundamental level of Bizayon. And he says, therefore, may ato lefi cheshbon zeh nizbonin b'dovenir. If we understand what's going on here, we should contemplate kama makifu ha'inyan shel lotinog b'minyan Bizayon. How broad of a scope is the application of this principle? Don't treat someone in a way that could humiliate them. And yet we don't understand that people insult people all the time. Look around you and see how many inanimate objects have a tzorech. For example, he says, take a slice, a plank of wood. What do we do with wood? Well, with wood, he says, you could assemble a chair and you could sit on it. And many people could sit on it. Or, for example, you can take a piece of metal and you can build a menorah, a lamp. Just look around you and see how many things have a tzorech, have a function. They can be used if you just use your chachma, your wisdom. The ein tzorech ze gadol mitzorech shel bizas mitzrayim ubevade sheyesh kvar al ze azhora shel otinog behem minig bizoyon. We look at inanimate objects and we have to treat them with sensitivity because they have a potential function. They can contribute. And how much more so in the case of a human being who has such a great contribution to make and he's created in the image of God and he's sensitive, how much more so do we have to take his chashivas and his kavod and give him the honor that he deserves? He says, "Pam iroli biyom kar gadol lishol bateyad." There was a very freezing day, and I borrowed someone's gloves. Hirgashti oz hargasha zot kama shovel lechora chefet zeh. He says, if you would sell these gloves on the market, they would bring in a few domim uatim, a few kopikis, you know, be almost worthless. But yet, in my situation where it's freezing cold, these cheap, inexpensive gloves are machai nefesh. They give me life, so to speak. Because otherwise I might get frostbitten. But the suffering, the anguish is intense. Umami od lufi ze ala adam. How much a human being lachshov to think about every significant object in the world? Like, for example, tsemer. Let's say wool, right? Wool could be used to warm up the body in clothing. All you have to do, you don't have to be a great scholar and a great wise philosopher, just look at the world and everything within and contemplate how functional, how much it could add to you, how much of a tzorech it might have. Little things, you know, the wood that makes a table, you know, the leather that makes a pocketbook, the glass that makes a, you know, it makes it possible to drink from. And look at something like wool that could warm up your body or warm up your hands, leather and so forth. If that's your attitude, and the Torah says that the steps leading up to the Mizbeach have a tzorech, and therefore you have to treat them with sensitivity and not humiliate them by separating your legs and so forth and so on. And therefore, how much more so when you talk about a human being? And again, we swing back to the original presentation of the Pele Yoetz in the very first source. Alti buz lecholam she'em lechadam she'em lo shah. You know, we live in a world that God created of interdependence. Let's say, for example, you're a farmer and you grow a crop and you want to make a profit and you want to support your family. Well, my friend, you need someone to market your produce. The person again who markets the produce and gets a slice of the profits, he needs the farmer to produce the land. There's no such thing as Robinson Crusoe. I mean, that's a very nice book to read, but that's not the way God created the world. We all need each other. You know, in the world of fish, I think it's in the oceans, it's called a symbiotic relationship. You'll see it in an aquarium. You know, one fish attaches to another fish. That's the way God created the world. That we all need all of each other. So, aim lecha adam she'aim lo shah.
Isn't Epstein a little too extreme by having this Christian evangelical?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to comment.
Well, we know it.
Now, we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to give an introduction to the second half of the same topic. And if you flip the page, the Pelioites in the same essay, which you have in front of you, I think it's towards the end, he writes the following. V'im yivazu acherim. What if others will insult you? Are you going to be sensitive about that? Al yachdim klal. Don't be sensitive. Again, that's very hard to live up to that. We're all sensitive. The Al Yetzei L'Riv, don't fight against him. Now, how could you not, you know, lash out against someone who stepped on your toes? I don't mean that literally, but figuratively, who insulted you. Ella, Oz, what should he do? He says, Yidke Yasoach, V'yomar, Li Ha'os, Zeh Li Ha'os. The fact that I was insulted is meant to be a sign. Shani nisav v'nela lifnei habore machmas avonosai. That somehow I'm repulsive. Again, he uses very strong language here. And in the eyes of my Creator, I have sinned. V'shalach, and God sent a certain individual as his agent, his with a capital H, his agent, Levazos Osi, Al Yideo Ish Halazeh. And this person would be an instrument in the hands of God to insult me. And that's all part of a divine curse and a punishment for my sins. Ki Hashem Omer Lo Kalel. Hashem really instructed him to curse me. Ukvar Omer Rabosenu Zichron Levracha. Sha'al anoshim ka'elu akosiv omer vi'ovav kitzeis hashemesh bigvurasa. Roz, were you able to find it in your edition? You have it open there?
In here?
Yeah.
There's several pages of English on this.
On Bizoyon?
And I can't...
See, in other words, they don't have the Hebrew at all. It's not...
No, it's just the English.
Ah, I see. But in my humble opinion, I mean, I could write a letter to the editor. It's not going to help. They should have one page with the Hebrew and the English translation on the other side. You know, like they have in Sindhuri.
Right.
Because then you could look into the Hebrew and then look. This is pure English.
A friend of mine wanted a set of these, and I called the publisher, and he said for $10,000 or $12,000, he's going to reprint it. I had one of the last sets. He doesn't have any more.
So what, he's trying to raise that money? So
no, he just said to me...
He's just saying, write the check.
A dedication. People want a dedication in memory of their parents.
Let me borrow for just a minute, and I'll give it right back.
I'm not following you.
Okay. And in the meantime, if anyone, you know, we can open the door. If anybody wants to... This is going to be for Purim. I'm going to leave it here if anybody wants to.
You had a wedding when you gave this lecture.
What?
I'm going to give a lecture now for Purim instead of my normal Chumash from the same author that we've been studying.
You gave it Sunday, didn't you?
I gave one on Sunday, I gave one on Monday, now it's Tuesday, so I want to give a third one. It's not the same that I gave on Sunday, and certainly not the same one that I gave last night. Oh, here it is. He says the following: if other people disgrace him, he should not respond or quarrel at all. Rather, he should be submissive, bow his head, and declare, "This is a sign that I am disgusting, and rejected by the Creator because of my sins, and he has sent this person to disgrace me, and God told him to curse.
And God told what?
To curse, meaning to curse me. So I was thinking that maybe he would water it down, but he gives it straight. Well, I'm sorry. He gives you, you know, he doesn't dilute it. You know, he gives you the language of the Kali Yoga.
So this is like, if someone hurt, you hurt someone, apologize. Someone hurt you, forgive.
All right, that's nice. And by the way, I'm going to try to see if I can weave into to next. One second.
Next 6 weeks is different.
So let me just take this opportunity to say that next week we won't be able to meet, but God willing, in 2 weeks, maybe that'll be our last meeting. I don't know, I have to look at the calendar before Pesach. But we're going to cover this idea that if someone insults you and you don't snap back at them, you might be in a great position to give a blessing. Are you familiar with that concept?
To
give someone else a blessing, you know.
I hate that to me a bracha is for a kadosh baruch hu, and when people give each other the blessing, I think they're diluting the whole concept of a bracha.
Right, but certain individuals, especially at certain moments in their life, have a school of power, a special power to give out blessings. Like for example, Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, that those who you bless, I will bless. And here, a person who's able to reach this level described by the Peleoids, that instead of lashing back at someone who insulted them and stepped on their foot, they say, you know what? Thanks, because this is your shliach from Hashem and I'm getting punished for my sins. Such a person is on such a high level at that moment that he becomes like Avraham, you know, that he can bestow a blessing. All right, hopefully we'll cover that next week.